Jim Brown, Reel 4.
It was being blockaded. It was desperately short of food. And yet, in England, when I was out of work, the shops were bursting with food. Couldn't sell it. And you starved. And yet the shops were bursting with food and you couldn't buy it. Yet here in Spain, under those bad conditions of a desperate food shortage, of a blockade, I still did not starve. I still did not know the hunger that I'd known in England when I was out of work. And there's rather a point to that. There is a point to it, which to me expressed the reasonable fairness of distribution. One other point when I was in Madrid, it's enlightening to some extent. I was in a cafe. There's a notice on the walls, comrades, do not damage the furniture as this belongs to you. The waiter also is a man. You see, this gave a feeling of decency to the atmosphere, which was always present. So, as I say, we
went. About your food in Spain.
Yes.
Well, what did you have?
It was mainly always rice. Something with rice. We had some meat with rice, maybe mule flesh, like the case it was, because it was so hard. And then you had raisins and rice, always, almost always. Rice played a great part. The bread was rice, rice bread, it got very, very hard.
Had you had rice before you went out to Spain?
Pardon?
Had you ever had rice before
Yes. And even worse than that, in this country, had something that may be strange to you, what was known as kettle broth. It was hard bread if you had nothing else. Hot water poured on it and salt to taste. That was known as kettle broth in the old days. And that's all it was. But rice. There's no hardship. I wouldn't say I suffered much hardship in relation to food. The hardship was here in relation to food if you were out of work. But
was there sufficient food in Spain when you were fighting?
Well, it's a difficult answer because it was so difficult to get up to the troops so often. Such as Brunetti only come up in the night because they couldn't get on the roads owing to the planes in the day. But we really had nothing to complain about, not while I was there. The food, such as it was, they tried. And that's a good point. They tried. And I wouldn't complain about anything like that. In a country in the States famous in, would be wrong. And I would say, at Rama, yes. I was reasonably well fed, reasonably, under circumstances. Also, in this long guard, only one thing I'd like to mention, I covered my... I was a house painter. I was familiar with, as a lot of painters are, The Ragged Trousers Philanthropist by Robert Tresham, Hastings, known as Mugsborough. And I thought to myself, from Mugsborough to Madrid, what a stony journey, but that's what the journey was. And you see these things strike you? Small, yes. But anyway, all that long period at Madrid eventually had to end, which it did. And we went this time to a village called Mondejar, M-O-N-D-E-J-A-R. Bit bigger than Madrigal's. Bit bigger and I think in some ways more pleasant. We were there. Organised a bit, a few more recruits, and one or two things I thought was humorous. Every morning they rang out the flag, Tommy Johnson the armourer, run the Republican flag up, troops all formed up in the square, saluting the flag. Okay. The little muff I was in, a bit tattered and torn. We used to march out last. Matter of fact, Samuel looked at us once, I thought we'd dismay. March out last. Right round the back of the troops, there's a cafe. We marched right to the back of the troops, into the cafe. And we used to sit in the cafe, drinking this coffee and what they call churros, these fried donut strips, criticising the bearing of the troops severely. When it was all over, we'd just slide out again and march back with them. never really did take any dining up luck for us. We were able to avoid that. I thought in some ways afterwards you do think it's a bit humorous, but it was pleasant at the time. So we were there, and eventually the people were good. Of course, they did the washing, and it was quite good, the people were. But we eventually left to go to Brunetti. The children could also. On deck, and I thought, well, very, very pleasant, very pleasant, very polite, gravely polite, but very polite. Very attractive in their way. We went to a mill with a peasant once, and took us in the courtyard. He gave us this kind of a paella, rice bread pass round, and pino, you pour it out, pour it in your mouth if you were lucky. But the women never ate. They just brought the food, which I thought was the women should have eaten. They prepared the food. They should have been there with the men eating it. After all, if you make the banquet, there's sharing it. That was my view, but not for me to criticise anything in another country. How they went on was purely their business. So we eventually got the order one morning, line up. It's very early in the morning, got all the equipment, rifles and on. Well, we left the village after about 5 hours, the traps came, away we went. And as we turned round the road and come past the village, there was a crest, a little hill rise. And all the women and the children in the village stood on this and they waved goodbye, which was very moving, really. It was moving, and we waved back, of course. That's very moving. But we went through Netty. And the first village was Canada. And it was hot. It was hot. It was in the middle of the summer. And it was hot. And there wasn't much water. And we had a job to try and take this village. We had a job. Anyway, we got past it at night. Lost a lot of men. And a bloke I'd signed on with at Edgware Old Labour Exchange, Tabby Davis, came out of Bannigan. He got killed there. He got shot there. Last I saw of him. Went on past Canada, hell of a fight there, on Brunetti. Got in Brunetti, we got in an house, and we were fetching up ammunition. And made a bit of a mistake. And there was about 5 minutes in this house, and come back to ask me to go back to see where the ammunition was. I went back. It's a line of troops attacking, I think it was Dimitrov. Anyway, they come out in line, I walked straight diagonally through them. No one took a bit of notice, I just nodded, they just nodded, and the battle raged. But no one took any notice. I couldn't find no ammunition, so I came back. Of course, in that war movement, the things vanished. Came back, and it looked like long grass or corn. I heard the planes coming, and I dived into that. And they did bomb, but the wrong side of the road, the right side for me, I was lucky. And I'm crawling through this hole, and another figure appears in front of me, crawling, very tense look in his face. I don't know who he was, might have been a Frenchman. I nodded to him, he nodded to me, and on we crawled our own ways. You know, it's quite like people meeting in the same street. We hardly knew each other. Went on, got back to Brunetti, and inside the house, there was a little piglet at the back with some chickens, and the boy said, we'll cook the pig and take it up to the boys. They like that. Cook the pork, boil it up. So we're discussing who knows how to kill the pig and how we cook it. And I saw a little pig run by the front door. And I said, cook, blimey, it's our pig, he's escaped. So we tore out after it. They were shelling the village at the time, or Brunetti village it was. And as we chased out the pig, a line of French troops, Franco-Belgian, I think, they were attacking. And the pig was in the middle of the both sections. And the pig had to fight a war on all fronts, and he lost it. Poor little leader. We dragged him back by his back legs, squealing, into the house. So we got him in, and then we found it wasn't our pig. Our pig was still out in the back. But we had to move on, and we left both of them. We left both. So we went on. There was a white mule. Why they had a white mule, I'll never know. Huge animal, lying in a dried up river bed near Mosquito Creek. then he was dead and he's laying on the pannier full of ammunition box there. The wooden box, it would sink inside, you pulled away. Anyway, we had to get it out, which we did, although they were firing in the mule and it made a hell of a state. Got out of that. And that was night, getting up at night, coming up the road next morning, a lorry blew up. We were hungry. So we died in the lorry. There was no food, it was garlic. We had tried some of that, very tough, garlic on its own. Anyway, while they're eating this, they shelled us, and I thought they must have been Germans, they were so accurate. So we dived into this kind of a ditch, and the last man to die was a little man from Manchester, El Paz, a very mild, inoffensive little man, fair hair. And he was on top, and he must have thought he was too exposed, he died from another place. He got killed, died from the other place. And bit of shell fell down my trouser. I thought it was very awkward, but it burned. But when we got out of that, the shelling is up. I saw Albert Parks laying there, dead, and I thought a bit guilty because he had five children and I'd beat him to the cover. So, what can you do? I mean, things happen, and that was the end of old Albert. So,
how badly were you wounded then?
Well, I'll tell you, not too much, but it knocked my right eye out. Well, finished it, I'll say. Finished it. So we went on. We went on, and we came further on. Then a man called Trampy Woodhouse, he was with us. Apparently been a tramp, Mr. Bill, and I was an intellectual, had many faults, but he was there. He started to crack up. He'd say, I've been watching you. You've been staring at me all the time. Why are you staring at me? Anyway, he started to crack up. Next day, he was on the food lorry. He come up in the food lorry, I've been shipping, and he said to me, look, this is all I have, this. I've been saving this for you. There's a lump of mule flesh, or a bit of mule flesh in the lean rice, it would have made a bleeding wolf a vegetarian if he tried to eat it. Oh dear, was it tough? Better put it in a can and bide it. But, okay, fair enough, Trampy. Then the next day he vanished. They told me they'd been machine gunned by planes. He caught it across the face. Might not have been much, but he gave his life. That's important. At the end of Trent, come to Mansfield in Nottingham. So we went on. Then the planes came again, and we dived into some shelter. And when the planes had gone, of course they were bombing, and we had to dive quick. But saw no one, it was just me and Johnny Connors. And everyone had vanished. So we said, where they gone? Well, this way, he said, this way, I said, that way. So we went. Then we got caught in what was more or less a box barrage, a square of shells, front, behind, sideways. You couldn't get out. You had to walk with it. As this, all these shells came to you, you had to go on. Anyway, we came to a ditch. We got out, lay in a ditch, then passed over. Got out, got on the road. Then we heard a jingle, the Moors, Moorish cavalry. Weren't we scared? When we knew what the Moors would do. Cut you up, cut your head off. Didn't fancy that at all. Made him very uneasy. Couldn't run, we were too weak. So the only thing we could do is walk with them and hope. So we walked with them as if we were on their side. And they took no notice. First chance we got, we were away.
That must have been terrifying for you.
Of course it was. Frightened me. And I was used to a few frights, but that really frightened me. Oh dear, oh dear. But anyway, got away with it. More luck than anything else. Then we wandered.
Can you describe the Moors?
Yes, they were, obviously, they were Oriental, obviously, Eastern, Asiatic rather. Obviously they were there. But from the point of view of uniforms, so many of the uniforms were the same. On both sides, there was a certain similarity of uniforms that at times it can be difficult. Perhaps that's one of the reasons we got away with it, you see. But, boys, They were dark and there, obviously, of that type. And the description of the man and the type, obviously, of that type. But there, the virtue of them, if you can use such a word in relation to what they were doing, rather than the quality of them, was in their fighting ability. That is the only way you can describe them all. They were very, very experienced fighting men. And they had this certain courage. It's no picnic. I mean, it wasn't a question that, bomb, 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 that wasn't so. I'd heard one bloke say at one time, show them the cold steel. It didn't mean a thing. They could show you the cold steel and all. Didn't mean a thing. What you're dealing with men who've been fighting all their lives. That's obviously to them. It was a profession. But anyway, there's certain things that do help to level things. It's determination, this one. And you acquire experience very, very rapidly. If you don't, you're not in a position to acquire anything, except a bit of hurt. But they were among the best troops Franco had. Of course, the Germans were the technicians. You know, the Moors were among the best troops Franco had, and he knew it. Although they suffered colossal losses, as they must have. They must have. So, you never really, for so much of that war, for so much, you never really came to close grips with the enemy. Not too often. You could see them now and again, but not too often you come to close grips. But,
so how long was it before you were able to find your own troops again?
Well, I'll tell you, we wandered that front. We knew then that we were behind the enemy lines. We knew that. We found a catchy of food under a tree we thought must have been left by the cavalry. It was so neat. And there was even chocolate there. So we then started to search for the British. And we wandered. Then we got caught by shells. I got a bit of shell hit me on the head and my eye went then. I presume it must have been that. So therefore I thought it not too good, and we wandered. We hid in caves. In one cave, got down, and the gas from the earth nearly killed us. We had to get out very quick. There was a gas coming up from the bottom. Oh, was it? Lethal. Got out, wandered eventually once. I lost Connors, I found a wounded mule in his place. I tried to rush it and couldn't. I had to leave him, couldn't have a shelling. Well, they'd make shells on one man and a mule, I never know. But they did. Anyway, they frightened both officers. So I had to leave the mule. Then come upon some Spaniards, very young boys. And there was two with revolvers. No retreat, no retreat at all costs, no retreat. And Brunetti had been a hell. A surrealist hell. Lack of water. Murderous it might have been. Especially wandering around here, it had been a hell. But nevertheless, you search. And I asked these Spanish troops. When I saw them, I knew I was back in our own lines. That's the one big thing. This was some time, how long I wouldn't know. Might have been 2 or 3 days, might have been 2 days. But we were back in our own lines, I knew that, or I was. And they knew not where the British were, so I wandered on again, find the British. And one night, I remember it was peaceful and quiet and starlit. I remember finding myself talking to a Frenchman about Lapeer. He'd been there, in the 14th Brigade. And I thought, how peaceful I laid on some rocks and just. I heard them talking, and apparently they were talking about going back, as the Spaniards were cut off, but had a job to go back. We didn't have many left, very, very few left of what were the troops we started out with, very few. But it appeared that the Marines went in and rescued them, so didn't have to go back. So we went back to Mondeca, and very, very few went back to Mondeca. They had all been killed, a lot wounded and that. But got back to Mondeca, an old peasant, he was very upset when he saw how many come back. But he was at Mondeca for a time, and one day a chap came up to me, he said, you in the first company at Cornwall? I said, yeah. He said, you're going home. I said, What? It's in here, you're going up. Anyway, get to go to the brigade headquarters, or Jock Cunningham, I'm sure it was. He says, well, he said, like to thank you on behalf of the Republic. You've done your duty, and you now go home.
Was this because you had lost your eye?
Partly, yes. Because when I saw the others going, one had one leg. Sound like the defeated remnants of the Napoleon Army, I think. But thanked him. So I said to him, well, look, I said, all this, what can you say about all this? How can you? There's so many incidents, so it's a mass of detail. He said, well, there's only one thing you can say. He said, tell the truth. Tell the truth. He said, that's all. Just tell the truth. Gave us a salvo conductor, safe pass. Went to Elversetti. Got the trucks, got a lift in, about 150 miles. Got to Elversetti, there were two barracks. Guardian National and the Salamanca. One you slept in, one you went to for food. But I found that if you slept in one, you couldn't get out. That's new gate like a portcullis. And you couldn't get out. I didn't fancy that. So I decided to sleep out, and it was warm weather. That was no hardship. So I slept out, but I could. Better than being shut in. And when they marched out the food, I marched with them each time and marched away afterwards. That was quite easy. There some days, wait for a train, give them an address in Valencia, go to this address, they'll help you. Some days we were at Elversetti, then we went to Valencia, went to this address, got a meal, said we put you on a train, you go to Valencia, to this address, they'll help you. They were quite pleasant, we sat on the beach in Valencia. Then we went on to Barcelona, got to Barcelona. So we couldn't get out. It appeared that apparently the chief of police was away from town, wouldn't be back, and we couldn't leave without his permission. So they said, meanwhile, go to the British consul, see if he can help you. Okay, we go to the British consul. Said, look, we want to go home, can you help us? Okay, who are you? He went out, then he kept running back. Who's the Cockney? Who's the Scotsman? Then he kept laughing, running off again, coming, who's the... And in the finish, he said, I can't do it. He said, what I can do is tell you. He said, keep up the streets, and that's all he would do. That's all the help we ever got from him. Keep up the streets. Yet, before I got to Spain, you had the same people telling you'd be a burden on the British taxpayer. Some hopes. Now, that's true. Raising this barrier. And of course, we got no help from him. So, we got this. Eventually we got out of Barcelona, put us on a train under the Pyrenees this time, into Perpignan. That's one bloke with his one leg and have one arm open, odds and sods. Get out of Perpignan and the police line up, one each side of you, straight to the neck, got arrested. Marked it to the police headquarters. There was a woman questioned me, then she gave a most searching examination. Age, religion, school, Barra, date of birth, where you were born, school you went to, parents' names, mother's maiden names, father's profession, grandfather's profession, and it went on. Ah, I thought this is not too good. So I made out I couldn't understand the way she spoke English, which confused her a bit. Then, wanted fingerprints, definitely no fingerprints. Well, this went on for ages. Eventually, after all this, the six of us they were doing. They came back after me and they said, look, 24 hours to get out of France, of course.
Why were they doing this to you?
Well, I think, afterwards I thought of this, I don't know, I can only guess. I think it may be that they wanted to make sure that there was no enemy agent percolating in with you, as you had no passport. It may have been that, I don't know, that's a guess. But it seemed to me a feasible thing. But it may not have been that, it might have been routine. So anyway, they gave us 24 hours to get out of France. So we went to this people's house opposite the police station, to this address we had to go to, and we said, look, we've been given 24 hours to get out of France. They said, all right, we'll put you on a train for Paris. And you go to this address in Paris, here's the money, get a taxi, it'll take you there. So we went in a boxcar at the back of the train, and we got in this boxcar, and a woman got on with us, which I thought was rather strange, but she must have been connected with the Spanish affair. We got to Paris, found a taxi, took us in this house. Little man, very excitable man, come on, this way, this way. Take us close on. This was a Spanish uniform we had, Spanish Republic, such as it was, but not. He gave me a Norfolk jacket that could well have suited George Bernard Shaw in his youth, with pleats down it, very old-fashioned knickerbocker suit style. He had a morning trousers striped that would disgrace the garden party, not grace them. That when you try to straighten the crease, you tore a big hole in it. I thought, you're not too good. And a pair of wooden shoes with white glaze button tops, which you needed a button hook to do up before you could walk in them. And this rather strange outfit was kept by a jaunty-looking cat called Lee Jockey. How I put this on the end, I thought, well, the least they can do is put me in mademoiselle's in this outfit. So away we went. Give us a meal, quick. You've got to get on this Dunkirk. You get on the boat train tonight. You just beat the 24-hour. So we go to there, we got on the boat train, okay. Gets through easy enough, didn't have too much problem. And arrive at Dover, about 4 a.m. We're coming through, and there's a plainclothes police says, you, dragged us out of the crowd. Of course, it's obvious. We were sunburned, we're in a bit of a bloke with one leg and that. First thing they said, they never beat about the bush. What fronts were you on in Spain? Oh, one of these fronts? What are you talking about? He said, I've been to the Paris exhibition. Where did you lose your leg? I got run over in Paris. So, after a time, they let us go. And we got in the coach. There's about a dozen of us in this carriage held up. And a man stepped in with us. He had framed badge in his coat. Frames, tourist agency, and we didn't like the look of him, so we got out. He got out.